Open the committee on public affairs, and we will open the public hearing on House Bill 3615. And Representative Butler.
Thank you, Chairman Starr. Senators, I'm Tom Butler from House District 60 in Ontario, Oregon. I've come today to testify to you on behalf of House Bill 3615. First of all, I want you to know that my motives are sincere. They have nothing to do with anyone coercing me to put together a bill to try and do any single individual any damage. That's not in any way, shape, or form what has brought this about. I want you to know that this bill has been amended in our committees on the House side to take care of some of the issues that were of concern to the vice chair of this particular committee, wherein we had requested that perhaps just one person be named and be named by the governor as the head and have some degree of autonomy. This bill has subsequently been amended so that it provides that the governor would not just select the members of the commission and have them approved by the Senate, but the governor would have the capacity to go ahead and name the lead commissioner of the Public Utilities Commission. And that lead commissioner, in conjunction with either of the other two, then will have the authority to make those decisions which will be necessary to carry out the true mission of the Public Utilities Commission. Senators, I want you to know that I have been personally attacked, as our motives have been vilified as being some sort of a sticking it to someone to try and put this bill together. But I have come to the conclusion that this is the right thing to do, it's the proper thing to do, and I have come to that conclusion because I understand and know full well that no man can serve two masters, let alone three masters. And in this particular case, sometimes there's no one at the helm when we've got personal missions in other directions that take us away from the helm. And I have 120 employees in an agency that goes through $30 million of budget. And the difficulty that we have here is that these 120 employees sometimes need a lot more direction than what they are presently getting. Now, we haven't gotten to this point without a great deal of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. This has been a most difficult road that we have come down. And we have tried to take information from people who would offer us suggestions as to what best to do with regard to this bill. And again, we have taken those suggestions and have worked out a solution which we believe that really addresses the issues. Again, with three bosses, I feel like that you've got 120 employees that could be in store for a recipe for disaster. I'd call your attention to two articles in the Statesman Journal of earlier this week on the 21st of July. These articles deal specifically with Senate Bill 622, which, as you know, has been passed and will become law. These, in both of these particular articles, it talks about technology and the advances in technology. It talks about moving forward, and then it talks about why it's important to have a strong PUC. And you'll hear testimony from someone here today who will tell you that everything that the voters wanted 10 years ago should be the same when people voted to have a three-person commission as opposed to a lead commissioner. that nothing has changed during that 10 years, that everything is fine. Well, that same person comes back on board and then says, we're going to have lower standards of quality, we're going to have lower this and lower that, that Katie barred the door, things are going to go all wrong. And if that's truly the case, then you can't play the fiddle both ways. And that's what this bill is about. It addresses those concerns. It says that the PUC should have good, solid, sound leadership. And that's what this attempts to do. The two articles from the Statesman Journal talk about the direction we go and is the status quo appropriate for the next century, for the next millennium. And I propose to you that the status quo is not going to be acceptable with these huge changes in technology. Faster than we can get on the internet, well, faster than we can buy the computer, which will take us to the internet, the changes in technology move away from us. And if we want the very, very best system that money can buy today, tomorrow it's antiquated. And under those circumstances, I bring you this bill, 3615, and request that you pass it onto the full Senate with a due pass recommendation. Now, I just want to draw from my own personal experience, and I am working directly with some of the folks at the PUC at this particular time, and these are folks that need direction. I have exchanged no less than 5 or 6 emails within the last 2 days with some of the folks at the PUC relative to what direction we should take the whole gamut of the services that are being provided and how we could speed up and maybe better enhance some of the services that are provided. Senators, you've received letters undoubtedly about this. I know I've received plenty, but recently in my mail I received a letter relative to the an investigation which is being opened up against one of the telephone carriers by the PUC and is opening up an action for inadequate service. And I want you to know that I live in a district where there is a small telephone company, which is a former member of the Bell Companies, which is associated with, but not directly, U.S. West. This company has about 14,000 customers. With those 14,000 customers, it has several thousand access lines to try and make sure that during peak periods, all of the customers are served. Recently, there was a rather major promotion, and I don't know what the promotion entailed, whether they were giving out a free set of hose, or maybe they were giving away a savings and loan. I don't know. But what they were doing was that Sprint came online, and I'll use names, I'm sorry to have to do that, but Sprint came online and was able to attract the long-distance business of 1,000 of those customers. Over 7% were attracted. Now, recognize that my local telephone company is not a long-distance provider. It's willing to provide that service to whomever. The lines are open and they're ready to go. The difficulty is that with the 2,000 plus lines that were available for access to the existing 14,000 customers, Sprint was able to buy with the blessing and at the admonition of the phone company, the local phone company, that it was inappropriate, and at the request of the phone company that they not be allowed to do this, they were able to buy one single trunk of 25 lines to service those 1,000 customers. Now, what's going to happen when 26 of those people need to use long distance at one time? And I'll tell you what's going to happen. We're going to get another PUC investigation. We're going to get another complaint, and we're going to open up a whole new investigation against a small telephone company that can ill afford, at 400 miles distance, a major, long-term, litigated action against them. And this is endemic of what is happening today as we speak. The regulations which were promulgated probably in some cases as much as 30 and 40 years ago are the regulations that we are trying to operate the PUC under today. And there has been but little effort to really get together and discuss those. As a matter of fact, the modification, I contacted the state of Idaho and asked why it was that customers across the river from where I live in Idaho could go through a six-week process and have an informal approval as to how they could start to have longer service, extended area service, where one small town, which trades in Ontario and does business in Ontario, which is 20-plus miles out from Ontario, took over 7 years to get the PUC to the point where they could service those 500 people on a local call extended area service basis. And when I called the PUC contact in Idaho, the comment was, I'll bet you that you've talked to someone in the state of Oregon, they didn't know who I was, and they have told you that it's our fault that your company in Ontario can't get service across the river. And I said, no, as a matter of fact, they haven't. And they said, well, that's the first time then that we haven't been claimed, or that we haven't been blamed for being the problem at hand. And so I guess what I'm saying is that other states around us have rules that they can respond to their constituents and respond to their customers. And I think at that particular point, I've probably gotten more exercise over this particular issue because I've had press reporters call me and say, is it really true that you're in the pocket of some utility? And I'm really tweaked over that. That's really twisted my nose pretty badly. Because I want you to know that relative to 3615, I can honestly tell you, I don't think that I've had a single conversation with a single utility company over the whole issue. It isn't that for me. It is the fact that we've got to move forward into the next century, into the next millennia, and we've got to be able to address some of the issues that are right before us. And the tools are not provided to the employees at present. The amount of money that we were asked to provide in the e-board, in the last session of the e-board in 1998, and the amount of money that we were asked to provide additional supplemental money for the Attorney General's fees to continue to duke out and battle out these number of lawsuits that are going through the State Supreme Court or through the State Court of Appeals and eventually on the Ninth Circuit. Ladies and gentlemen, we are spending a fortune in things that we should be spending in rulemaking to try and make the process easier. And I would just implore you to please not make any changes in 3615. Send it on to the full floor with a due pass.
Well, I have a question. I wish Jimmy Ryan was here. Why couldn't those people that were using Sprint and they couldn't get a line, why couldn't they just switch to somebody else?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, that's what will happen is that eventually they'll have to switch back unless Sprint comes and buys additional trunks of long-distance lines. But under the current regulations, no one will make them buy additional lines to serve the people that they're collecting the fees from.
Okay, and I had a bill similar, but Ginny understood it. Oh, there is Gary Dollar. Could you come up, Gary? Does this have anything to do with my bill I was trying to get through? My little fight with the PUC over Beaver Creek Telephone Company? Could they be affected if we pass this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gary Bauer with the Oregon Telecommunications Association. Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, no, this bill is not related to the bill that you had earlier that you worked with on Beaver Creek Telephone. This is a bill that Representative Butler has, since I recall from the, earlier in the session, tried to look at a way that he has an interest in the structure of the PUC, one that I think he put together pretty much by himself or in concert with some other House members. I don't know that he had any involvement from the
Another question, sir. I'm just saying their problems wouldn't be affected at all. Could be solved.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, the issues that Beaver Creek Telephone Company and some of the cooperatives had were related to some of the rulemakings and the interpretation of those statutes and rules. To the extent that the structure in the commission has changed, I suppose that could affect that.
They're, in a lot
they're not directly tied together, though.
We can't find an estimate on that.
You gave some real specific examples. How would those change if we adopt this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, we need to come back and address some of the antiquated rules and regulations. While we're focused in another direction, we're abandoning an industry that really needs oversight and it needs some direction. And we need a composite. If we truly have three directors, then we need at least two of them to be headed the same direction at the same time. And what this bill does is it allows the governor to go ahead and name one, but then in concert, two of them at any time will basically take care of the instructions to employees, hiring and firing, and giving them their departmentalized responsibilities and their direction of trust that they should be going.
That doesn't mean that they'll give them any different directions than they're receiving now. I mean, the governor already appoints all three of them, and they seem to agree with each other quite often. And so I don't see any, unless you have reason to believe the governor is going to, and he's going to be here for another 3 years, but he's going to appoint somebody different. Seems to me that exactly the same things that are going on now would continue to go on.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, they certainly could go on, and we would hope that, and these changes were made with the blessing of the governor. I think the governor feels like that we do need to step up into the next century. The rules that we're talking about have not been substantially changed during the last 10 years when we felt like that we've needed three commissioners. And I think that the attempt with the three commissioners was to perhaps focus out into some of the fields of energy and telecommunications and those kinds of things. And it seems like the energy has not it's dissipated somewhat.
I think the three members, at least from what the public seemed to feel at the time, was that perhaps we had a dictatorship in us to be able to broaden that out a little more. That's my point I'm trying to make is, if you're trying to get at rules, this doesn't do that. If you get a different commissioner appointed to the body, and they are chair, and they have a specific, well, you probably have to get two new commissioners, and they have a strong direction to change the rules that are there, and they have another commissioner to go along with them, then you could get there. But that may be the original bill, but it seems that that appointing the chair, who could be one of the members that are already there, and appointing staff, which could be the staff that's already there. I mean, my fear, as you know, is that we end up with a new chair who takes off and goes in another direction, and suddenly we've lost our reliable staff, especially in the middle of deregulation. But it seems to me, for your concerns, that this doesn't get you there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deuce, let me respond to that first by saying that, first, I have every confidence in our staff that we presently have. I think we have excellent staff, and I sincerely say that because I sincerely believe that. I've met with the staff when we finished up the Huntington operation to bring Huntington online with Ontario last year. I was there. I watched the staff. Staff are very focused. They're very, you get them going in the right direction. I think what they need is they need a mission statement which will let them know that they, first of all, have the full support of of all three directors, and number two, they have the attention of all three of the commissioners themselves, and finally, that they are given some latitude to start the rulemaking process, which will speed up some of the things that are so antiquated in making the new direction that we really need to go. I feel very strongly about, when I communicate with the people, that they look to whomever is willing to give them ear to ask for, you know, can you take us to the next step? And I am no utility whiz. I'm an accountant by profession, but I also deal with codes and regulations. And I know that when something is broke, it needs to be fixed, it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be perhaps studied. But studying it in and of itself will not get us to the final level of actually implementing a change. And I had suggested early on just the possibility that certain levels of change could be made, not drastic changes, but certain levels, and then let there be a shared responsibility in implementing new regulations and telephone service, that is something which really didn't come to pass, and so it doesn't mean that it won't come to pass. But I think what's happening is that they're looking for direction, and they need direction. We need someone at the helm who will take the helm and then move forward with that in conjunction with one of the other two commissioners. And I'm sorry, Senator Deuce, I can't tell you what the relationship is amongst the three. All I know is that when I see a new lawsuit filed or a new action initiated, new problems brought up, I only see one person's name as the person who is the offended party at the PUC, and the other folks are basically in the background.
Representative Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jim Hill, District 5. I was listening on TV to my good colleague. I think he's done a very good job in presenting the issues here. For some reason, this bill has turned into the concept is that somehow this is going to erode the independence of the PUC. And there is nothing in this bill that erodes the independence of the decision-making process at the PUC. It doesn't erode the independence of the members of the PUC. This bill simply asks the governor appoint a chairperson, and that chairperson is then responsible and accountable for the administration of the PUC as an agency. It doesn't change any of the rules and regulations that affect and direct how they make the decision process, which was at the heart of the referral that came from the legislature in 1985, changing from a single-member PUC to a three-member PUC. I have looked at the arguments that were in the voters' pamphlet statements. It was not independent. They were not talking about how they need to be an independent arm and not accountable. Some of the discussion on the House floor has been that they should be nonpartisan. Well, I mean, who are we kidding, folks? We require that two of the members of the commission cannot can only be from one party, and so it is partisan.
We have the chair of the commission who was quoted in yesterday's Oregonian regarding this particular bill, pontificating on what the effect of a Republican governor might be. You know, that right there erodes the whole argument of an independent, and his quote in the paper was such that if a Republican governor were elected were to appoint a pro-U.S. West commissioner, that consumers are going to be rejected. Well, that tells me right there from the comments, then, does that mean that he's an anti-U.S. West commissioner? You know, I mean, and that's the issue, I think, at the heart in terms of the PUC. They should be independent. They should look at each and every issue that comes before them and make a learned decision. And what we're talking about in this bill is simply accountability from an administrative standpoint. As the representative has indicated, they have 120 employees, they have a $30 million budget, and you have three captains. Who do you hold accountable? And I think that's, to me, that is this issue. The second part of the, I don't have the bill in front of me, it's section three or four, the study and the task force. There's a great, you know, concern of what, you know, that I'll tell you exactly what my discussion with Bill Wyatt in the governor's office was regarding that section of the bill talking about the interim task force. The issue there that I'm trying to address, and we talked about it down in the Ways and Means Subcommittee, Representative Butler and Senator Dukes were on that committee, in terms of is what is the role of a forward, a long-term planning process? That's what I'm concerned about. And talking about, and how do we develop a system where we look at the health of the infrastructure? That's what my goal is to get out of this issue. It isn't to subvert Senate Bill 1149. It will be implemented. You know, the governor's going to sign into law. I think he already did. You know, this issue is not going to take have any effect on that, because the decisions that are required under Senate Bill 1149 have to be done in an open public process. And this bill doesn't change any of those processes which were set up under the referral process. This is a good bill. It's seeking accountability from the PUC as an agency. And I would just simply state, there is only three branches of government. There is not a fourth branch of government. There is not a category of an independent agency. They are accountable, and they are accountable in this structure to the executive. And we may not agree that, you know, with every decision that the governor might make, and that's our right to sit and fight about it, but I also think that he should be held accountable for his agencies under his stewardship, and this allows him the mechanism to be accountable for the PUC from an administrative standpoint. He's not going to have control on policy decisions.
May I ask a question? I was sort of thinking of something else for a minute, and then I started listening more closely. Who said that about the U.S. West that you quoted something?
It was a paraphrase in terms of the article that was in the Oregonian, and
it's Ronnie
Chairman Ronnie.
And I just wanted to say it causes me great concern, because I remember he was a card-carrying communist during the Vietnam War and went and played footsies in Hanoi with our enemies. And they're kind of against capitalism, so I think this is a great bill. Oh, yeah. You should have read the Eugene newspapers. Oh, yeah. I'm not making it up.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, I may disagree with Commissioner Heath, because I do not know what he's...
Oh, it's factual. Very public.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
We have the other witnesses, and we've been called to court. Quorum, but they didn't come back and call us again, so we're still hanging in here. But we're subject to call to the floor at any time. Gary Conklin.
Mr. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the chance to testify on this bill. My name is Gary Conkling, and I'm here representing the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities. And you'll recall we were one of the advocates of Senate Bill 1149 and supporters of electricity restructuring. And it's in the main in that context that we appear here tonight to express concern to House Bill 3615 as it's come to you from the House. If this bill simply would be what's contained in Section 3, which relates to some type of an interim task force that looks at the structure and the role of the Public Utility Commission in light of changes in regulated industries, including electricity and telecommunications, for which legislation, significant legislation, has moved through this body, we would not object. In fact, we don't object to such a study. And nor, by the way, do we object to the Dash B7 amendments, which I believe Senator Durfler has offered or will offer, which we think, in fact, are improvements for the task force. But many of the problems that the proponents have indicated relate to the need to examine this agency in light of changing circumstances. And we certainly can understand that and recognize that. But this bill, in advocating for a study of what changes are appropriate, also proceeds to make some. And we think in the detail there is some mischief. For example, Representative Butler said that he thinks it's good that the chair of this commission be appointed by the governor, and we're not necessarily comfortable with that idea, but if that idea was to go forward, we think it's at least appropriate, in light of what this agency does, that such a chairman act in concert with at least one other member of the commission in hiring and firing employees. But there's one other thing that they do that he actually alluded to that he thought that the chair should do with the consent of his colleague, at least one colleague, and that is to assign staff to rate cases. The way the bill is written, that's not what it requires. The amendment that we have offered, and I believe others will add their voice to it, the B8 amendment, would in fact correct that deficiency and accomplish what Representative Butler indicated should be the case, that the chair, in fact, could act, but only act in assigning someone to a rate case with the consent or in consultation with an additional commission. There's also language in this bill that gives fairly broad powers to the chair. And they make us generally nervous, but in particular, the reference on page 2 under on line 26 that refers to the conduct of employees also is, if you think about it, fairly open-ended. What conduct are you referring to? These are the kinds of things that have caused the customers of utilities that are regulated and maybe moving towards some type of a competitive structure to be nervous. If, in fact, after the considered judgment of a task force well-composed that did its homework and brought back recommendations to the 2001 legislature, these might be some of the changes that could be in there, maybe not. We don't oppose the task force, but we do have concerns about making changes before we know what it is we're trying to accomplish. And we fear that at a very critical time, when significant rate cases involving millions of dollars in ratepayer considerations, as well as utility considerations, are in the balance, that we'll be making changes that we're not so certain are as well considered as they might be. So I will stop with that, Mr. Chair. Again, our position would be, frankly, to have this bill move forward with the task force with the amendment that Senator Durfler has proposed, If, in fact, there is the will to make the structural changes, we would encourage you to adopt the B-8 amendment. We would still be uncomfortable, but at least would feel somewhat more comfortable that the commission chair would not be empowered beyond what we think is reasonable.
Mr. Convier. Arnold. Gary, who should draft the policies dealing with the conduct of employees? Who should do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tarnow, the commission currently has personnel policies. And just as a parenthetical aside, when amendments to House Bill 3615 first appeared in the other body in a committee, they didn't actually have the right language in here to repeal some of the existing personnel-related language that currently now is in here. This bill is more complete. So the commission has, first off, it's subject to applicable state law, but it also has policies that it is using today to generate how its personnel is to conduct itself, how their procedures are to be, and how assignment of cases are made. So they already have processes in place.
What are you doing, Jeff? What are you doing? Bring that over here. Quick, let's measure.
No further questions. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Call Bob Jinks and John Glasscock.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Jinks. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. I just handed the staff some testimony from Diane Royce of the IBEW. She's out of Salem today. It's not that she couldn't stay late for the meeting, but she had business that took her away from Salem today, so she was unable to make it. And I wanted to make sure that you got her testimony. IBEW feels strongly about this bill. I wanted to first let me say that the CUB represents residential customers before the Public Utility Commission. I've been involved in proceedings before the PUC for several years, and we firmly agree with Gary Conkling's comments and the B-8 amendments. We agree that the B-8 amendments really would help reassure us on this bill and fundamentally change what we're most concerned about, and that's political directives. Through the chair to individual staff members that can come with the threat of losing your job, being reassigned to your job, and manipulating who does what in a way to change outcome in rate cases. Let me start by just mentioning that I think it's important to note how the PUC operates. The PUC acts as a judge, as a three-panel judge, to determine rate proceedings and other utility proceedings. The typical way it happens is the utility will file a case. The PUC staff will do an independent analysis and file their case. That's an official record. That's evidence. That's testimony. That's the record. That's the basis of what the commission decides. Representative Hill said they decide the issues in open public meetings. In most cases, they don't, or in important cases, they don't. In contested cases, they act like a panel of the Court of Appeals. They deliberate in private and publish a written position that's based on the record that's in front of them. And this record comes primarily from the utility company and from the independent analysis of the staff. And I believe the PUC staff is highly competent. I disagree with them fairly regularly on issues. I've said some fairly untenable things about them under my breath at times, but I have no doubt that they're professional, they're diligent, they're extremely competent, and what they give is an independent analysis. They go where the numbers take them, and they don't always take them where I feel is in the best interest of my customers, but I do think they go where the numbers take them. We're concerned that this bill will politicize that process and politicize that record that the staff that the staff presents. Interest groups will go to the governor and attempt to get the governor to go through the chair and change what the staff is filing, and by changing that record, you're changing the basis of the decision. The three commissioners can't go outside of that record and make decisions. So whether it's two or three or however many people are deciding it, it really, their limits on their decisions are based on what's on the record. So if you can use the governor, use this chain of command to change the record in a rate case, you're inherently going to change the decision in that rate case. To understand why we're concerned about it, you only have to go backwards. And my concern is this bill does go backwards, not forwards, to when we had a single powerful public utility commissioner. In 1984, Commissioner Gene Modlin ignored the advice of the staff and sent a letter to PGE authorizing an accounting change. That the commission staff had argued that that action would substantially harm customers and cost customers $96 million in higher rates. Furthermore, they stated that the PGE's analysis that the commissioner used for his decision was so flawed that it was worthless. The commissioner's response to his staff was to order them to be silent. They were told, don't tell anyone that that's the case. When the Attorney General got word and opened an investigation, the Attorney General, Dave Frohnemeyer's conclusion was that the commissioner had violated two separate Oregon revised statutes and ordered him to reverse that decision. That was 1 year before the public, in reacting to those kinds of abuses, overwhelmingly passed ballot measure 4 and created a three-person PUC. And what Commissioner Modlin did would be those sorts of actions could happen again. Under House Bill 3615, the chair of the commission decides the internal procedures for the government of the commission, the conduct of its employees, and the assignment and performance of its business. Those are broad powers, the conduct of its employees, the internal procedures for governance of the commission. Those aren't things that will be decided by the three commissioners. They're things that are reserved for a single person. And in doing so, the chair of the commission could decide, just as Commissioner Modlin did, that this decision isn't significant enough to warrant a formal decision. What Commissioner Modlin did, he sent a letter to a utility saying, go ahead and do this. Because he didn't open a docket, groups like Cub didn't know about it. There wasn't a public proceeding. So the chair can say, well, just tell the utility to go ahead and do that. We're not going to open a proceeding, so the other two commissioners won't know. And then the chair, because the bill gives the chair the power over the conduct of its staff and the ability to assign staff, and assigning staff is extremely significant because with that you have the power to reassign staff, you have the power to demote staff. And with that power only in one person's hands, the chair can turn around and order a staff person with a pretty heavy hammer behind it. They'll be demoted, they'll be reassigned, to cover up and not tell the other two commissioners this information or not tell the kind of changes that have happened. We've seen that happen more than 10 years ago. That's part of why the citizens of Oregon changed the law, and under this bill we're concerned that we could see it again. And that, I think, is largely why we oppose the bill. We don't appear studying the change. I'm not sure that inherently the governor appointing the chair is a problem. It's the powers, the immense powers this bill gives the chair. And let me say, I'm the director of a nonprofit. I don't have a staff of 100 working for me. I have a staff of about 7 people working for me currently. My board of directors sets my employment policies. My board sets the structure for the governance of my organization. My board delegates me a lot of powers on a daily basis to carry those things out, but it's my board that reserves most of the powers here that you're giving to an individual person. You don't have to give this power to an individual person to have accountability. You can remain these employment powers and these broad powers with a three-person commission. And what will that three-person commission do? It will do what it does right now. It delegates it. It sets up a hierarchical structure. We don't have 120 staff of the PUC running around working for three different directors. They all work for an individual director, and you work yourself up to a utility program manager on the one side and an executive director on the administrative side, and those folks oversee the, sort of the branches of the commission. But it is a hierarchical structure. People do answer to one boss, and that one boss is delegated their role from a three-person commission, similar to how my organization works, similar to how most businesses that have boards of directors, most organizations work. So we believe that the bill should be opposed in its current form. Again, the dash, the B8 amendments that Gary talked about, which reduce slightly. I mean, it really, Gary's amendment changes about 8 words in the bill. But in doing so, changes the ability of that one chair to have the kind of power over the employees that we believe could be misused and politicized the whole process. So we would urge you to reject the bill, or if you're not going to reject the bill, adopt the B8 amendments, and we think that could make a significant improvement in it. And the final thing I will do, and I won't sit there and try to read it into the record because it's about 40 pages, is I'd like to give you a copy of the Attorney General report that I was referring to that investigated Modlin's actions of 1984.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Glasscock, and I'm a member of the American Association of Retired Persons. I represent their interests with respect to utility issues in Oregon. And I, along with Cub and Bob Jenks here, have sat in on many, many utility dockets and watched them function. And it is absolutely true that the commission itself makes a determination only after the staff and only after open hearings have occurred and all the stakeholders have been represented, and at the same time the staff has analyzed it and brought forward their recommendations. Only then does the commission make a decision. That's the kind of independence we think is terribly important to hundreds of thousands of folks in Oregon. I represent more than 430,000 seniors in Oregon. Half of all people in Oregon over the age of 50. Most of these people were around in Oregon, and many of them voted very strongly for Measure 4. It was voted by 71% of the voters in 1986. The reason they voted so strongly for that was they were incensed that we would have a situation that would be politicized that affects their welfare. And I represent many people who are on very low incomes and who really rely on an independent commission to make decisions on the basis of the facts and the law, and based on the recommendations of experienced staff that is well-trained and that has expertise. I haven't heard anybody testify that the staff does not have that type of expertise. But we will lose that expertise if what they are trying to do by way of analyzing this and recommending to the commission is second-guessed by the commission, by a single chair of the commission. That's what happened before 1986. And the information that Mr. Jenks has passed along to you is an analysis of that and a full report of that from the Attorney General's office. At that time, Attorney General happened to be a Republican. Weird conversation about Democrats and Republicans here as I've listened to testimony. I don't think it has anything to do with the party. It has to do with fairness for hundreds of thousands of ratepayers in Oregon. They rely on the independence of the commission. We have no quarrel at all with the governor having a chair of the commission responsible to him for the administration of the commission. What we have a problem with is a commission that is chair commissioner that is so powerful that he can cut deals and not confer with the other commissioners and regulate the staff in such a way that staff has no recourse but to just simply knuckle under and whatever they recommend is ignored. That's what happened in the Modlin case prior to 1986. So we strongly oppose this bill as it's written. We don't have any quarrel at all with studying this thing to find out what we need to do in the future to get ourselves into the 21st century with respect to new technology, because it is changing very rapidly. We all know that. We don't have any quarrel with that at all. We don't have any quarrel with a single head reporting to the governor. What we have a problem with is how much power he has with respect to the experienced staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Shannon?
Well, yes. Lots of times when I turned 55, I was given a mail to my house, an invitation to join the AARP. If I were to join, would I be one of the 430,000 people you represented?
Well,
is that just 430,000 agree with you on this issue?
I can say simply this, Ms. Chair and Senator Shannon, I can simply say only this, but we have, AARP has national policies with respect to utility issues. Those national policies are designed by volunteers from all over the country, including Oregon. As in any large organization, there are obviously people who will disagree about certain issues. I can't say that every single member may agree with what I'm saying today, but I can tell you that it is the policy of AARP nationally and in Oregon, and with respect to most of our people in Oregon, to comment as we have today about a commission and about the fairness issue and about the independence issue.
Okay, but you didn't poll all the Oregonians that belong to the AARP.
It would be hardly possible for me to do that, Senator Shannon.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Oh, I'm ready to move.
Thank you very much. Anyone else testifying? Mr. Hazelwood, keep it short. We're Mr. Chair, I'm going to be very short. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's always interesting to hear AARP testify. I love to hear that. I represent 430,000 seniors in the state of Oregon.
Lee
Hazelwood, State in Oregon, 97383, 1831 East Pine. Phone number 769-7877.
Anything more?
Local security number 297-11546. It's always interesting to hear AARP testify that represents 430,000 members in the state of Oregon. That's not true. My wife and I belong to AARP. I'm in the process of possibly cutting my card up, so that means they only represent 429,999 members. They have never taken a survey of how members in Oregon feel about any regulations at all. And I have just had a quick chance to study House Bill 3615B7. And I like what it reads. I think bringing into the new century is maybe a time to take a look. I know what the voters voted in 1984. I did not vote for that, but I know what the voters voted for. So it's very interesting when you hear that I represent 430,000. I don't think that's true. So, but I'd like to see you adopt the 3615B7 amendment.
Thank you.
Questions?
No questions. With public hearing, open work session.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 3615B7 amendment.
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 3615B7 amendment. Discussion?
Where do you come from?
The amendment,
Well, I don't
want to.
Sorry.
Oh, gee. Well, that's okay. I'm sorry.
Why do we need it? Where'd they come from? I don't.
They set up the policy for the task force.
Mr.
Chair, I have a comment on those, and somebody earlier has raised this every time I've seen a committee or task force created a session that has legislators on it. There should be two from each side and at least one from each political party. This task force is going to bring back recommendations for the next legislative assembly that will have, that could have huge ramifications. And There was only two legislators on it, one from the House and one from the Senate. So it seems to me that it ought to be broadened out.
Okay, maybe.
Let's just figure that out next time. We don't need any amendments.
Oh, yes, we do.
No, we don't. I haven't been told about
that. I think there are three people here who think we do.
One doesn't count.
The mission is supported.
That's Mark Powell.
All right.
Senator Starr.
Hi.
No. No. Sir, possible notice of...
Wait, this is the amendment, Merrill. Let's hang on a minute.
She's already ready to go, Fred.
Aye.
Aye.
The amendment is passed.
You can do the last page.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3615 as amended with floor due pass recommendation. Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 3615 as amended with floor due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Duke?
No.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator Tarno?
Aye.
Wow.
No. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3615 moved before the due pass recommendation.
Yeah, Mr. Gerald, there goes something. You got to do that first.
Yep.
He's in a hurry down there.
Did,
he hasn't there, eaten yet.
I didn't hear that bumper. Don't
happen. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Now I'll give notice, Mr. Chair, possible minority report.
And I will also. Possible minority.
A different one?
Oh, yeah, we'll just see.
Different than the last one? Yeah, I hope so. Different minority. Yeah, this one's going to be too.
Okay, we got Governor's Committee meeting. No, I guess. What happened?
Did you adjourn the meeting?
Let's see. Let's
see. Let's
adjourn the Senate Committee on Public Affairs.
Okay, now I'm going
to. Thank you all.